Hello, friends. This is Dave Larzelier, and you're listening to the Balanced Band Director podcast, a show about music teaching, leadership, and balancing responsibilities as a teacher, spouse, and/or parent in order to live your best life. Each episode, I have the tremendous honor to speak to educators, composers, and friends who share their insights and experiences about life and teaching. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving a rating and review and share with friends and colleagues that you think might benefit from these conversations. Additionally, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Balanced Band Director. The podcast is brought to you by Work of Art Custom Batons. Mark is a master craftsman who specializes in creating one-of-a-kind conducting batons that are crafted to fit each conductor. Work of Art also markets score study pencils and protective baton tubes. I've used Mark's batons for years and love the look and feel of my batons. Please visit Work of Art at www.woacb.com to see all that they offer. Be sure to use coupon code BALANCE10 to get 10% off of your custom baton order today. Again, that's woacb.com. You can also follow Work of Art on Facebook and Instagram at Work of Art Custom Batons. And now, on to the show. Michael, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can, man. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, awesome. I've been having some issues at the front of the podcast, so I'm glad to hear it. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. It's a nice sunny day for
once.
I
was just going to say, man, I got out for a walk this morning, and the sun was awesome. It was just great. I think it's been weeks since we've seen the actual sun, so.
Yeah, pretty nice.
Yeah. Well, hey, super excited to have you on the podcast today. Thanks for taking a little time out of your busy schedule for having a conversation with me. I think it's going to be a fun one, so thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I won't lie. I'm a little nervous, right? I'm not a talker. I'm not a talker, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, this can be easy for you, man. Well, hey, so for my listeners, my guest today is none other than the amazing Michael Emerson. Mike is a great friend of mine and the band director at Holt High School. And like I said, excited to have Mike on the podcast today. Mike, can you just start off by telling us kind of what you do at Holt and, you know, what the day looks like? You can kind of do the hybrid under normal circumstances and then the COVID edition, if you don't mind.
Sure, no problem. I really appreciate the introduction. I'll try to live up to it as best I can here. I'm blushing. Yeah, I'm glad we're not on camera, but I did shave. Anyway, you know, normally we've got a nice big band program and there's four band classes during the day and then a music theory class during the first semester. So I start the day with the wind ensemble, kind of the advanced musicians, really great stuff. Jump into the symphonic band, kind of what a lot of people call the middle band or you know, a little more experience. And then the concert band is third and fourth hour. The class was so big, I decided a few years back to divide it in half. A little unorthodox at times, and you know, it's got its own set of challenges, but it was so much easier than having a class of 90.
Sure.
Man, that was crazy. So third, fourth hour is that, and then fifth hour is planning time. And then at the end of the day, we wrap up with what I call advanced music theory. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, it's not advanced music theory. If you know, I've got a lot of choir kids who join, choir and band kids, and people who are interested. But I had to change the name of the course because there were people who didn't know what a quarter note was.
Right.
And on the first day, wow! I mean, it's like, Mr. Emerson, if that's your real name, like I don't know what you're talking about. So, you know, it's very you know, a good introduction.
Yeah,
to the music theory. And then in the second semester, actually, the theory class drops away because I do a jazz band before school.
Yeah.
Now, in COVID right now, we have essentially a block schedule. So suddenly I'm meeting with the students every other day, except on Wednesdays, you know, first, second, and third hour twice a week, fourth, fifth, and sixth hour twice a week. And then Wednesday is everybody for a shorter period. So, and everything is virtual in Holt right now, with it being virtual. It changes everything. So it's really mostly band and all high schoolers all the time. Yeah. So yeah, there's that going on.
That's great. Now, when you do your jazz band, you said that meets before school. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it meets before school during the second semester, just 2 days a week.
Okay, cool.
I've thought about trying to beef it up, you know, don't know, maybe one more time a week. I'm not sure how that would look.
It's hard. And then, so you guys are, it's like, it's just a standard 6-period day. Is that right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. 6-period semesters, the whole, you know, it might as well be 1990 something. That's crazy.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm actually wondering if the kind of the COVID schedule experiment will encourage people to relook at some of those kind of block ideas or trimesters or whatever, because it's kind of, it was just kind of a free for all with scheduling things. And I personally kind of like the block idea. It's nice to have, I guess it's nice to kind of have your days be a little different. That's kind of how I like to think of it, you know, and you don't have to see the same kids every day. Not that that's a bad thing, but it just kind of changes things up a little bit. It feels a little fresh, I guess.
Yeah. I would respectfully disagree being on both, but yeah, sometimes, you know, with band for me, and really like my whole life, I feel like there's just these little bite-sized chunks of everything.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I've talked to people and I used to teach on a block way back in the day, and I've done the trimester thing and been kind of through a bunch of different schedules. And sometimes it can be tough. You know how it is.
Yeah.
All the horror stories of block scheduling and everything. Right. And I don't know. I'm very routine. I like the routine of a rhythm of a day and very predictable.
Got it. I think, you know, the block that's really tough for people to work on is the one where like you have 4 classes and you take them for a semester or like a quarter. Like I think they do that in DeWitt. My first job in Marshall, I taught on a block, but it was like the block where you had like 1, 3, 5, and 7 one day and 2, 4, 6, 8 the next day. And then on Friday you had all your classes. And I like that one. It was kind of nice to have your kids for like an hour and a half and then not the next day or whatever, you know, certain ensembles. But I do understand what you mean about having the routine and having that kind of consistency. There is certainly advantages to that.
Well, and interestingly, now that I'm looking at almost 20 years of teaching, I might be a little more receptive to what you just said, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, how long have you been at Holt?
I redo the math every year. And
right.
I have to like count on my fingers because of the way the school year is.
Right.
But now, don't get the wrong idea. Like I did well in math. I placed out of college math. I just don't think about it. I got there in 2005 in the fall.
Okay.
So I believe this is year 15.
Okay. That sounds right. Yeah. That sounds right. Yeah. That sounds right. Cool. Well, that kind of gives us a good segue. What did you do before you were on Holt? If this was year 20, you're 15 in Holt.
Yeah. Well, it must, if it's only year 15 in Holt, it's only year 18. So I'm sorry for
that's
misleading.
Okay. That's
I'm
okay.
Sorry for misleading the listening public out there.
That's okay. You know, this year has seemed like 3, right?
Yeah. I was the director of bands up north in Gaylord, Michigan for 3 years at the high school.
Yeah.
And I taught half my day beginning band and the other half of the day was high school. There were two high school bands up there. And yeah, that's where I started my career. And that was my career right out of college. So
yeah. Just
Gaylord and then Holt.
Cool. So can you give us the Mike Emerson story? Start with, you know, how you started, how you got started playing in band or in music and, you know, where you went to school and all that stuff.
Sure. Well, it's interesting. The great Carolyn Sherrill. Carolyn Sherrill recruited me to play trombone.
Okay.
In 6th grade. Now, this is a little unorthodox. I feel like, I don't know, I don't really tell the story very much, but I was going to play the oboe. And the only reason
that I did not know. That
I know. I went to St. Gerard School, which is, I mean, a mile from my current home. It's crazy to think about. And the west side of Lansing, in elementary school, and they started band in 5th grade back then. Well, the only reason I was going to do the oboe was because, you know, Carolyn recruited in such a way that, well, the smartest musicians, the most advanced musicians play the oboe because it's so hard.
Right.
And therefore, I was like, well, that's me. I mean, you know, that's going to be me. And that's just my personality. So, and then for whatever reason, again, this is a whole different conversation, but band met during recess at that time. And I didn't even join. I didn't join band the first year it was offered. I wasn't going to do it. I was like, yeah, it'll be all right. And then Carolyn Sherrill, just, I had spoken to her in music class. She taught music too. And she mentioned the trombone and all that kind of thing. And then she just came into class one day to recruit sixth graders, second year students into the sixth grade band, you know, even though we'd be first year students, we could join the band. So she said in front of the class, she said, "You know, I heard Mike Emerson was considering joining. That's good because we need another trombone." And that's it. And I said, "Okay, I'll play trombone."
Yeah.
And that was it. That was it. So here I am all these years later, I'm a trombone player. Anyway, St. Gerard was like that. So I just joined the band, and band was very fun. Carol and Cheryl left immediately to have kids. So I didn't have her as a band director.
Oh,
I didn't realize how great she was until, you know, 30 years later. But
right.
It's someone named Laporte, Mrs. Laporte, and then Mr. Muthel, Chris Muthel, who taught or teaches music in Lansing schools now.
Okay.
Was my band director. And then I went to Lansing Catholic Central. Now it's just called Lansing Catholic. Lansing Catholic had no marching band. Lansing Catholic had no, we never went to band festival. They weren't members of MSBOA. And I decided, it's funny, my whole existence was kind of like Spartan Brass.
Yeah.
We had 40 or so pep charts, and we played at the basketball games. We played at all of them. Every boys basketball game we played at. And band was almost like, I guess band was pure release, if that makes sense. We worked, but it was pure release, like Stanford, you know?
Yeah.
Or the
just Harvard, fun.
Yes. The Harvard band, just pure. Hey, let's go have some fun.
Yeah.
Then my senior year, we got a new band director. Liz O'Brien was the name of band director, 11th grade. And she was the best.
Okay.
She was the best.
Yeah.
It was fun, huge personality.
Do you keep in contact with her at all?
I have talked to her one time. She was a principal, you know, again, the Catholic school. I don't know.
Yeah.
She was a principal at St. Therese or something for a minute. I got to believe she's retired by now.
Okay. Yeah.
So then, let's see, Eric, I can't even think of his name. He came in my senior year. Oh, Eric Welch. He was a friend of mine. And Eric Welch came in my senior year and just started talking to me about being a music major. At the time, I wanted to be a physical therapist. I was a football player in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bad knee, and I'd had so many physical therapy appointments. I really liked that. So I was going to be a physical therapist, but he, you know, kind of planted the seed in there. And all of a sudden I decided to say, "Oh, I'm sure I could do that. I'm the best trombone player in my 30 person band. So I'm sure it'll be easy." Right. It's like, man, I can read eighth notes like you've never seen. So I'm sure, you know,
right.
And interestingly, I practiced a lot in high school. Now, again, I was practicing the pep charts. I was practicing, you know, for the spring concert, we're playing Tequila, right?
Right. Right.
We're playing Tequila. And then for something slow, we play the Carpenters Close to You, right? So, anyway, I would practice all the time because I wanted to be as good as the trombone player who was 1 year older, who sat next to me. His name was Andrew. He marched in the Notre Dame band, actually.
Wow.
At any rate, went to Michigan State and auditioned for Curtis Olsen. And he said, I like your technique a lot. Who taught you that?" And I just, what do you mean? Like my band director?
Yeah.
I didn't have lessons. I didn't have anything like that. And, you know, got accepted into school. And I actually was accepted into Indiana University as a music major, and
wow.
In Central. They liked what was going on. And of course, I said, "You know, that scholarship sounds nice, but I'll go to my backyard and get kicked down for 4 years instead."
now let me ask you, did the Spartan marching band have anything to do with that decision? Were you a lifer, you know, SMB fan?
That's interesting that you bring that up. I'm sorry. Again, you warned me in the pre-interview, right? When you prepped me that it was going to be like talking, but, yes, I was going to go to Central. It was beautiful. I had good grades.
Bob Lindahl offered me a scholarship, and I thought this is going to be great. And I actually went to a football game at Central. Now, my parents met at Michigan State in 1969. They've had season tickets to Spartan football since 1969, right? It's those guys. So I had been going to, my parents had 4 season tickets when I was growing up to football games. So again, I didn't really think it's because my dad wanted to watch the game and not listen to me talk to him, you know. I'm taking my 3-year-old to the game. I'm like, man, that'll be
interesting.
Yeah, that'll be a nice walk around the concourse. Anyway,
for $200.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, won't take that. I'm sure the game will go quickly.
Right.
So when we'd go to these games. I watched the game ever since I was in 7th grade. The band was just amazing. So I went to a Central game when I was 18, and it was cool. And I thought the band was super good. You know, the Marching Chips, or I'm not sure exactly what they're called, but I thought they were really good. But the thing is, honestly, the size of the stadium.
Yeah.
And Central was playing Eastern. So it wasn't, it was not a low attended game. You know, there were a bunch of people in the stands, and I don't know if you've seen the Central band do when they play the alma mater.
I have.
Oh, it's really cool. The whole crowd, the crowd, like, I don't know how to describe it. It's a cool thing, and I'm going to try to make it sound as cool as possible. At the end of the alma mater, the whole crowd claps the cymbal part while doing the cymbal flash, that they clap in a certain way, and it's respectful. It's very cool. So you're seeing all these great things, but I kept thinking, this is not a college football game, right? Because I'm used to 70,000 and the crowd going insane. And there were, it was probably, there was probably 10, 15, 20,000 there.
Right.
And, I always had it in my head, you know, again, campus is 7 miles away. I'm not going to go to Michigan State. I'll be a Michigan State fan at Central. And then I took a bus tour of Michigan State after, you know, I had like a sedan chair at Central, right? You know, there's like 4 guys, and they're like carrying me in this chair, fanning me like, hey, I'm like, wow, this is the greatest place ever. And I took a bus tour at Michigan State, and I said, I've got to come here. I have no idea what it was. Yeah. I have to come here. But I really think the Spartan Marching Band has something to do with it. Now, interestingly, it was not a tradition for me to watch the band before the game. I only knew pregame and halftime. I didn't know what the series was. I learned.
Yeah. Yeah. Real quick. Yeah.
But that did have something to do with, there's no regrets. There's no regrets of any kind. Never. And it's interesting. This is tangential, but I try to tell that to my students. I don't tell the story that long or that windy, but I try to tell them, you know, people talk about being nervous about the cost of college or university. And I just say, it's tough to put a price on that. Although now,
it is.
And now I'm going to have to, because my kids are going to graduate in 5 years. So my tune might change, but I just try to say, you can't, there's no regrets, and do it.
Yeah. I agree with you. There's something about that experience, I think, that you can't replicate, you know. And I have students, you know, I'm sure you do too, who like end up going to MSU, but then like living at home or living with their parents or going to LCC. And I'm always like, you know, the college experience, the education is one thing, but getting out and living in the dorms or living on your own is such a crucial step at that point in your life. I think that it's worth whatever it costs, even though you could live at home, you know. It's a tough sell on some people, and it's a tough sell on some parents too, you know, but I think it's super important.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I don't think it's wrong to live at home. I don't, you know, it's not,
sure,
but
of course
at the same
not.
Time, I try that. I, you know, the anecdote is that when I met Mrs. Emerson, my beautiful wife, Amber, when I met her, when we got married, you know, we inherited each other's student loans, right? But we never, ever said That wasn't worth it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
We never
right.
say it. And that's what I try to explain, you know, and, but it is intimidating. And I do believe it's weird to say this because I'm not sure how far outside of music we're going to go in this conversation. I feel old, but it's true. It's true. There's certain things I feel, it's just, I feel old. College costs so much less. It doesn't seem that long ago, but in 1998, wow, the cost difference, and that's 20 years. You know, I get it.
I mean, it's probably, would you say it's doubled? I mean, it probably is. I would imagine it's doubled since
I would
we
think
were in school.
At least. I'm scared to even look at tuition rates right now. But yeah, and that's real. That's real because something tells me something. I'm not a scholar at this, Mr. Lars Lear, but something tells me our salaries haven't doubled.
Have not doubled.
College tuition has doubled, but our salary hasn't.
Right, like so many other things. Well, hey, so it's awesome. I'm really glad you mentioned your teachers growing up, and you mentioned Professor Olson. How about other influential teachers or people at MSU that you either keep in contact with, or just have left a legacy or an impact on you?
In terms of keeping contact, there are two that come out immediately. And the one, believe it or not, is Professor John Reed, the vocal music, the conductor.
And, sure. Yeah.
Man, for various reasons, I'm sure I don't know if any professors listen, for various reasons, I joined a choir. I joined the State Singers my junior year. And I love singing. I do. And John was incredible because he could be crazy. I mean, crazy, hilarious, and say things that were wild. And, but because of that, now again, his clientele was music majors.
Right.
Because of that, he was and I'm sure still is a prime motivator.
Right.
I think he could take people who are, you know, average singers and just get a sound out of them that is just wonderful. And I don't know. I have no idea what perfect chord sound is. Okay. So I don't know if it would be perfect, but man, it would be wonderful to listen to for me. But just seeing him troll the room and yet instantly make everyone so comfortable. So comfortable.
I got a funny story for you. I bet you didn't know this, and I started to interrupt you, but he was, before he was at MSU, he was the choir director at East Lansing High School for a year. I'm not sure if you
actually did know that, but I didn't know how long it was for.
I'm pretty sure it was just a year. And he actually, when he came to East Lansing, he bought a house two houses away from where I grew up.
Okay.
So I knew him as a neighbor before I knew him as a teacher. And then my sophomore year, I was like kicking around a couple of classes, and I was like, couldn't land on one. He was like, why don't you join choir? And I'm like, I never even considered it. And so I sang in the concert choir at East Lansing.
Really?
For one semester under him as the choir director. And he was, like you said, I mean, if there's just not a more charismatic teacher, director that can make you feel valued and make you feel like you're part of something special. I mean, that was one thing that I took from him. And then, you know, he left after my sophomore year, and, you know, and I was hooked. I mean, I was in band, obviously grew up playing trumpet in band at East Lansing. And I auditioned for the top choir at East Lansing, made it into the top choir, and, you know, then found out over the summer that he was going to MSU. Wow. And so it was kind of a crusher. But then he also became the choir director at my church. Yeah. And so I got to sing with him at People's Church. Like, he was the choir director there. So I was in his choir there. And so it all ended up kind of working out. And, you know, his, you know, my family and his family have been like, I mean, they grew up, you know, he was still, you know, neighbors for a long time. So, But yeah, and then I kind of did the same thing. I sang in State Singers, I think once, 1 or 2 years at MSU. And he had kind of like a, correct me if I'm wrong, at least when I was there, the State Singers rehearsal was the same time as Marsh Man rehearsal. And so he had kind of like a, Sunday night group for people that couldn't come to the regular rehearsals. Wow. And there was like half a dozen of us in there. And so I was in that group. And then I think I sang 1 or 2 concerts with them or something like that. But yeah, awesome. And still you see him and he's like, I'm sure he's like, he probably is like, you know, super excited to see him. He just, you know, he makes you feel like a $1 million.
Well, yeah. And you know, he, it's funny. He has a boat now, the boat, right? And the boat is in Whitehall. Right. Now I haven't visited him on the boat yet. We do keep in touch. We were able to reconnect last year at MMC, but my mom is from Whitehall and my parents live 10 miles north of Whitehall now. So I've toyed with it. Just say, we got it. Let's Facebook him. Cause just a great guy.
He loved it. Yeah.
Andy Perkins told me that my teaching voice is John Reed. That's what he told me. He said, now this was years ago. I think it was my second year in Holt or third year in Holt that Andy told me that because he saw me in front of my students. And he said, we all have our teacher voice. And he said, it's John Reed. So there's just, I hate to, like, I don't know how I'm the one to circle back to your question, but I'm always the one going off on tangents.
No, it's all right.
Really, the other one is, it's John Madden. And sure, John Madden had so much impact on everything only because he was always cool. And I mean that in the sense of his teaching. I never remember Fire and Brimstone. I never remember Fire and Brimstone in rehearsal. But he was direct and he was so methodical, I guess, and just able to explain what needed to happen. I owe a lot of my whole style in that way to him, because frankly, I found out early, unfortunately, again, back to John Reed, the clientele, if I go too crazy, if I get too high, on emotion, the problem is, Dave, this is going to be so hard for you to believe. And anybody who knows me listening, this is going to be a shocker. I'm going to go for the next laugh. Like, if a joke, it was a joke bit. Lands, right? If a joke lands, it's like, this one on.
Hey, let's keep going.
and the problem is if I get too far into the weeds with the John Reed craziness, it'll be like, wait a minute. I forgot. What's the fingering for F sharp? Never mind.
where were we? What are we on?
And conversely, just kind of learning. I think learning who I am as a rehearser or a teacher. It's similar with the John Madden thing. You can't. For me, calmness and explaining directly. I don't really get into the fire and brimstone at all because. If I let myself, it's only happened maybe twice in my career. If I let myself get super, super mad, it's genuine. If that makes sense, my adrenaline is firing, and I can't get myself back. It's class dismissed. If I get that angry about anything, really, I have no idea what piece we're playing. I have no idea what we're going to do. It's done. It's all the amygdala. There's no logic.
My students call it my blackout moments.
my students
kind of what happens. It.
It's been 19 years since it happened,
It unfortunately happens to me occasionally, but as you said, less and less as you get older and more experienced.
Well, and I marvel at, I this is true. There are people who can do it, kind of with intention and somehow be angry or fire and brimstone, but it's not personal. So they're like, okay, where were we? and I can't do it. Okay. I can't get yeah. there.
It's kind of like you know, it's like football coach. They kind of go football coach on him, and you know, it's the Izzo. You know, Izzo's got fire and brimstone, but at the end of the day, you know,
the
players know that somehow, he loves him, you know.
It's not even that. It's in the moment. They're able to bring the fire and brimstone and stay in the game. Like when I get to that point, it's just my personality. When I get there, I can't. I'm out of the game. I take myself out of the game. I can't go there. It's very, I don't know. I wish I could a little better. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I remember when, you know, one of the great joys of my life was the year that I was a graduate assistant at MSU. I was a grad assistant with the marching band, and it was a super great experience. I had an absolute blast. And you know, John was the director, and I can remember one time he got kind of cross with a couple students, and it was done so eloquently that I don't think even people really knew. If you were just staying there and you didn't know him, you wouldn't even have really understood kind of what happened. He was such a master at it. He said something to the effect of, there was like two girls talking or whatever while he was kind of giving announcements at the end. And he kind of looked at them and kind of said, excuse me. And then he basically said something to the effect of, you know, I don't appreciate the disrespect. And it was like, I think that those girls were probably just cut to the bone, because it was like, you know, he didn't have to say much. But
like the Godfather, so powerful, yeah. Like immediately. Yeah. And you're just like, oh no, I'm sorry. And the thing is, that's a reasonably positive thing to say. It's kind of matter of fact. And I don't think he probably didn't even mean it. It's like stating a fact. And that's the thing. It's like,
right, exactly. Here it is. Yeah, it's not taken personally.
Right. I'm sorry, Godfather. I'm sorry.
<You know? laughs> Awesome. Well, you know, so kind of segueing into or transitioning into you as a teacher, like what are some things that you kind of hope or plan on, I guess, having? What does it mean to be a student of Mike Emerson? Like, When a student graduates from Holt High School, what are some things that you hope that they got from you and they can look back and say, you know, this was a great experience, and here are two or three reasons why?
That's a scary one right now. Speaking of feeling old, that's a scary one. But I'll tell you, this is weird. This feels like a humble brag, right? But there are a lot of times when parents, you know, parents of seniors will come to me and just, this was a high school. This was so wonderful. And I think a lot of directors, band directors, theater teachers, play directors, coaches get this.
Right.
And it's so wonderful. I'm glad. You know, it's like me too, right? I joined a year late, but I never left, right? I never left band. But what I say,
right,
I hope they learn something too. This is something I've thought about. I used to be a big part of the, I'm going to call it, for me, it was marching band. It was this team. You're going to learn teamwork, and you're going to learn what it is to be part of a community, and you're going to learn all these kind of things. And his name was Abik. He was from Africa, but he taught French. And he talked to me about what education was for him growing up in Africa. And this is relevant, I promise. He said, in my country, we had to learn music. We had to learn we had to learn another language along with everything else, because that's what it meant to be educated in my country. So, and I don't even know what country, you know, he grew up in, but for me, all of a sudden, I started thinking about, okay, so you look at, we'll call it modern language, right? The French teacher, what are they teaching? And a lot of, you know, the cynics will say, well, you know, we need algebra 15, you know, we don't need French. But the thing is, what do you need algebra 15 for? What do you need all of this for? Do we really, for algebra 2, for example, I was very good at algebra 2. Hey, here you go. The current Spartan hockey coach, Danton Cole, his mom was my algebra 2 teacher, Mrs. Cole. Anyway.
Nice. Nice.
I don't remember how to graph a circle, but believe it or not, I remember it's two variables multiplied and they're both squared and it turns out to be a circle on a graph. Hey, great. When am I going to need to know that? And really, like, when is an engineer going to need to graph a circle? So you start thinking, well, when am I going to need to know the fingering for F sharp? Well, when are you going to need to know who Proserpina is? When do you need to know who Othello is? Well, just in case Jeopardy calls. Okay. Okay. But also, maybe you'll be educated. Maybe you'll know something else. So in addition to again, to circle back, I hope that people, yes, I hope that people who graduate from Holt know what it is to be part of something, know what it is to maybe work through conflict, know what it is to, be part of a group and the teamwork and empathy and all that kind of thing that can come about with a big group, but also know what it is to put in hard work and know what it is to learn the fingering for F sharp and C sharp and know what it is when they see a piece of music and they see a key signature, they know what it means. Not because they'll be a better contestant on Jeopardy, but because they'll have more knowledge. They'll know more. You know what I mean? And that is very interesting to me. Like, wouldn't it? I don't know a thing about a lot of things. I don't know a thing about crocheting. And if people who know how to crochet, it's like, man, they know that. That's kind of cool that they know that. I can't play the bagpipes, you know, but that's a musical thing. You know, I can't, I don't know how to describe it. But you look at, look at an auto repair. You know, they know how to do that. They're educated in that. And maybe they know a little bit of Shakespeare. Maybe they know, maybe they've heard First Suite in E flat, right? Maybe they played some piece by Frank DeKelly in high school and they hear it somehow, and they're like, oh my gosh, I know that song. It's interesting. I hope that they learn some of that too, just for the education, for the sake of knowing it.
Yeah. And I think kind of what you're pointing to, or what you're dancing around a little bit to, is, and this is where I think a transition happens for a lot of us early on, hopefully, is that really it's more about the process of learning than the actual product of, like, what you get at the end is obviously important. You know, we're kind of, I guess, to use the analogy, filling a vessel, right, of knowledge. But at the end of the day, the really important thing is the process of learning, and the process of, like you said, working hard, I think, is really, for me, that's become a main focus for myself. It's just teaching students how to understand how to work hard towards something, be passionate about something, and to try to achieve your goals.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's really important that all the MSBOA Festival judges listening right now know that, right? It's not the product. No, I'm just kidding. It's not with the Holt band. I swear we worked hard. It's not the product. Sorry. It's been too long since I told a joke, right? Yeah, I do believe that. When I teach, it's so, I find it so structured. It's amazing. It's so structured. Yeah. First we do this, then we do this, then we do this, then we do this. And it is. It's fun. It's very cool to see progress over 4 years, that and to have that working no matter the product. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about kind of those systems you're talking about, the structure, man, if you will, that you could share, maybe even if it's like a young teacher that's listening, or somebody that maybe is struggling?
Well, I'm afraid to say too much because of my MMC proposal, right? They'll be like, oh, no, just listen to the podcast with Dave Larsen-Lear. You can't I'm sorry, Mike. You're not gonna
you'll get it all.
Again this year. That's not gonna happen because you already said it all in the podcast. So anyway, no. You know, this is not a Michigan State thing. This is many know probably just who know me. A student taught with the unparalleled Mike Kaufman. You called me the amazing Mike
right?
Emerson. I don't, if I'm amazing, I don't know what Mr. Kaufman is, but it's I don't know.
He's the Godfather. Let's put it that way. He's the Godfather, right?
You want to? Yeah. If he says I don't appreciate the disrespect, there's oh man. Anyway,
oh boy.
Anyway, it's directly tied to the way that he started his classes, particularly the concert band, the band with mostly freshmen and new high school members. And we come in and we start with scales and scale patterns every day. Scales and scale patterns. And I make them up depending on the group. Now I do this with all the groups and they can tell you, you know, it's for the wind ensemble, it's maybe 9 to 11 minutes. For the concert band, it's almost 40. But there's patterns of the scale, right. And I try to get them thinking in a key, not mindlessly playing the scale. For example, it's something like concert B flat, which we don't start on. We normally start on concert C, but concert B flat. For example, instead of just D, 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 I'll just grab my trombone most of the time, which is good and bad, but I'm most confident that I won't play a wrong note. And I'll have them play D, 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 D. And make them play it, you know, and try to not to give too much information to them. Just say, hey, try to figure this out. And hopefully for me, interestingly, I with online teaching, I do this all the time. And now I'm like, man, I can play scales. it only took me 15 years, but don't mess with me on B flat major on the trombone. Come on. So anyway. then there's two rhythm studies, and they're quick, but there's rhythm studies every day. There's different rhythmic texts, Basics in Rhythm by Garwood Whaley, the old Grover Yaus 101 Studies in Rhythmic Rest.
That's a Kaufman standby. I remember that.
Yeah, well, more on that in a minute. We do two rhythm studies, and they're quick. The other one, again, like you said, a Kaufman standby. For the upper groups, we do something, another Grover Yaus. It's 20 rhythmical studies, and that is just technique practice. Every note in those books, all 20 of the studies, every note has an articulation marking, whether it's an accent, a slur, or a staccato, every single one. It's wild. And the dynamics vary. Every line, the dynamics vary. So I think it helps with sight reading. I hope I'm right. I don't know if it does or not. But then there's a chorale, then we tune. Then there's a chorale. Then we get going on class. Interestingly, I find myself... when there's an upcoming concert, I have to make myself scale that back. You know, speaking of the process as the product and all that kind of thing. And my big thing that I tell them is that inevitably some freshman asks me by the time it's December, why do we warm up so long? And I always say the same thing, not frowning, but not smiling. I just say, we don't. And they say, what? I say, we exercise.
Yeah.
You know, it's not warm-up, it's exercise. So,
like
and the young groups, instead of the 20 rhythmical studies, my concert band, there's a book, there's a text called The Sight Reading Book for Band. And they are just, I don't know, 20 measure sight reading things. There's 100 of them, and they get a little progressively more difficult. And they're little tiny pieces. They're one... 30-second pieces, and we do two of them every day. So, lots and lots.
That's great.
Lots of exercise. Awesome. So much exercise, but yeah, very, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? That is actually a great segue into maybe pivoting a little bit in our conversation and talking a little bit about how you personally bring balance into your life. I mean, I know, you know, you have a family and you do are a really a great dad and a great present husband. And, you know, you do some things on your own that are, you know, hobbies of your own that are important. And, you know, how are you able to balance all those things while still being, amazing band director?
I'm trying for you. I hope so. I hope so, Mr. Lars Lehrer. I hope so. interestingly, it started with the urging of Mrs. Emerson. And I say urging,
sure.
Insisting.
It's a kind of saying it, yeah.
But when my older son, Ethan, he's 12, when he was born, it was hard. It was a transition. And there was a feeling that I don't know. It's 12 years ago. It's hard to remember. But essentially it boils down to the fact that Mrs. Emerson Amber was able to tell me, just leave it.
Yeah.
It's going to be back. It's going to be there when you go back tomorrow. And when my younger son was born, Owen, who's 10, he's just 23 months younger, right? That was new territory, right? Two kids at home, newborn and two. That was new territory. And weird things started happening. I think you asked how I maintained the balance. It started as not quite kicking and screaming, but there was and still is a degree of guilt. Okay. Sometimes it's, and I hate the word guilt. I don't like the word regret either, but sometimes I get that band director guilt.
Right.
In that, you know, if I stayed another hour and a half, that section of the music library would be organized. But anyway,
right.
10, 11 years ago, it just started, and Amber was able to say, I need you here at home. I'm exhausted and I need you here at home, and you need to kind of figure this out. You gotta make this happen. And when I did, I'll come home at 3 o'clock, right? When I did that, it forced me into being kind of hyper productive during planning times, during lunch and things like that. Now, I'm a pretty active guy. I try to keep things very light and laid back and try to maintain that air of calmness or not even calm, maybe just unconcernedness. you know, just whatever. Hey, yes. We're a solo ensemble for 12. Let's have some fun, you know. But I am really particular on things, and that it just kind of forced me into that. So for better or for worse, I started really, really working on the planning periods, and then just getting home and separating, like completely separating the work from home, if that makes sense. And
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. You know, I was just going to jump in really quickly and just say, you know, one of the things that I think of when I think of a person like you, who I think is really good at this, is the word present, you know, and I think this is something that I've struggled with, but the pandemic has actually helped me with this, I think, a bit. But like, I think, and you mentioned this, basically when you're at work, you have to be 100% present with what you're doing at work. And when you're home, you got to be 100% present with what you're doing at home. And I think you mentioned this earlier too, but I think what the trap that I would fall into is I'd be at work, and I would kind of dink around during my planning period, and I'd think about home, think about kids, think about wife, and then I'd come, and then I'd feel guilty because I didn't get everything done, and then I'd come home, and I'd be thinking about work, and it was like, you know, and it just was like it was so out of balance. And I think, you know, you bring up a good point of just you know, you set some parameters about when you're going to go home, and you get as much done in that time. And then when that bell rings, you go home.
Well, it'll
be there the next day.
This hasn't happened in a while, a long time, but early in my career, calling in sick, it was just a nightmare. I would rather work with just pneumonia than try to put together sub plans, you know, that are meaningful, that are this, that are that.
Yep.
And that's the kind of, it's like, look, it, you know, and Amber was able to kind of help me see just, this is your health. Like you're not helping anyone. And really interestingly, I feel like I'm like name dropping. But someone who told me my first year in Holt, it was very tough sledding, taking over for Tim Perry. It was hard. And you know, it's right. Anybody who's at a school for a long time, it's going to be hard for the next person if they liked you, you know, really hard. Augie Toma told me. Augie Toma, he could tell I was really trying to supply the lion's share of the energy and have everything, you know, everything hitting every single cylinder within the first 6 months of my having the job there. You know, these a 10-year project, well, I can get it done in 6 months because I literally don't need sleep. Okay. Right. And actually Augie Toma told me, he just said, what time do you leave the building? What time do you go home? And he said, if you bankrupt yourself, you won't be nearly as good a teacher. And I didn't believe him. But when Amber kind of said that, all of a sudden it let me kind of streamline things. And all of a sudden it I feel like a better teacher. I feel more effective. I feel like, you know, the bands play a little bit better and they learn a little bit more because, like you said, I'm present and more present there.
Yeah. That, and I think that's so true. And that's kind of one of the reasons I started the podcast was to honestly pick people's brains about the way that they do this, because I think it's, especially in our profession, is really hard. And I like the way you use that word bankrupt. It's so easy to bankrupt your own health and your own happiness in the interest of trying to make your band amazing, or to, like you said, you know, have the most organized music library in the history of music libraries. I mean, it's like the work will never go away. I mean, there's always something to do, and so you got to take care of yourself.
Well, the problem is sometimes I feel like I've gone too far, and then I still am okay with it. I feel like sometimes I have too much time on family. But then actually Mike Kaufman again has talked to me a little bit about that I'll never regret that. You know, you don't get the time back, and
never. No.
I've been able to say, well, I'm not doing that right now. Or well, it's just a job, and that's you know, whereas I don't know. I always relate things back to festival. You said your band, you know, and it's funny how at first I'll admit it. I'll completely own it and admit it here for the listening public on the internet. You know, with the background I had, you know, the Spartan Marching Band, we were awesome. We were amazing. And that's how you were supposed to be. You're supposed to be the best, and all you got to do is show up and you'll be the best. And it's very, very, for me, it was incredibly ego-driven. Incredibly, you know, like, we need to be the best or people will think I don't know what I'm doing. So now it's just different. Right. It's, we're not the best. So now everyone knows I don't know what I'm doing, and that's okay. And that's okay. Come swim in the pool. It'll be fine.
I think that's a very healthy attitude. Hey, you know what? If you don't mind, would you talk a little bit about when you got body in shape and you lost a bunch of weight? Talk about
when
that happened, why that happened.
I don't know how heavy to get here, but do you remember me in the big days? The big days. Yeah,
I do remember you. Absolutely. I don't think I ever saw you. I think your biggest was when you were in Gaylord. So I don't really think I don't. But when you came back, I mean,
I had this conversation with my kids. There's a few pictures that are, you know, and there's a lot of people in Gaylord who wouldn't recognize me, and not just because I lost all my hair. So at the end, first of all, not a lot of people know this, at the end of high school, okay, 1997, I was rolling heavy. I was a football player. I was a lineman, and I was close to 300 pounds. Now, again, I was probably 6'2". 300 though, like my senior football picture, big 7'6" is big 7'6". Okay. That's, and I had this gorgeous, this mane of hair anyway. But yeah, I was just big dude. And honestly, I started really watching it about March of my senior high school, March. And, because I knew I was going to march at state, and I didn't want to be too big, and I was afraid I couldn't do the kick step and all that stuff. So I actually lost a pile of weight before going to college.
Right.
Probably, you know, 70 to 75 pounds before getting to college. Now, it's been a struggle. The weight's been a struggle the whole life. 1,000 factors in there.
Right.
So at the end of college, this is tough. But I was very into what felt good right now. I was a rule follower my whole life, still am, to a certain extent, and more of a people pleaser as opposed to a rule follower. I really, you know, I don't want to make anybody mad and get the good grades and do the right thing and all that kind of thing. And I'm not sure what was going on with me, but I was very into what made me feel good right now. And there was a lot of partying, a lot of partying. And I was with a crowd that was partying harder than I had ever partied really in college. It not good, bad, or indifferent. It's true. I never started partying like that until the end of college, and a lot of, you know, going to the bar and spending money and all that kind of thing. And that led to late night food trips and everything. And it just started packing on. Right. That continued. The last weight I know that I have officially, it was 340 pounds. And when my third year in Gaylord, my best friend on earth got married, and it was awesome and wonderful. It was on October, and I kind of knew I knew how unhealthy it was. I knew how bad I looked, or bad's not the word, but I didn't feel good about the way I looked. How's that? At all. I was very self-conscious about it. And I knew, you know, my tuxedo, I don't know how I got that thing on. It was the tuxedo from undergrad. I don't know how, but I wore it at all. I'm conducting in this tuxedo, and it's 7 inches from buttoning. Like there's no way. I can't believe I didn't split it like Chris Farley, you know, like on accident, you know, going for the big hit, you know, in the Robert W. Smith piece.
Right.
So anyway, you know, at any rate, I started walking. I was driving home from this wedding, and the colors were incredible. And I knew, I just started walking. I wanted to be outside. And I started walking. And what happened was my schedule changed, and I stopped doing the fast food thing. Again, I was very into what makes me feel good at this moment. Fast food for lunch, fast food for dinner, every day. I mean, I'm single with a paycheck. Mm-hmm. So I started, my schedule changed, and I had to pack my lunch.
Right.
And if I pack my lunch, I might as well make my own dinner. Well, I kind of went on a crash diet. Amber needs to close her ears on this one. She knows the story, but it was hugely unhealthy. I developed a system where I had probably around 900 calories a day. And I would every night, I would eat 2 fat-free hot dogs and a bun and a half a cup of cottage cheese. Now here's the thing, Dave, I love hot dogs. I love them. It's so weird. I love, I can't, I right now, I could, there's, Oh God, I can't handle. I love hot dogs.
So your mouth watering just thinking about it.
And I ate them every night, Monday through Friday. But and I love cottage cheese. It's no worries every night. Now here's the thing: on Sundays, I could eat whatever I wanted. So I literally go out for breakfast and stop at Taco Bell on the way home from breakfast. Okay, like whatever I wanted. And actually, they call it delayed gratification, right? I basically stopped drinking
right
for a while there. I in a health conscious effort to drop weight, I stopped drinking. And if it was a Thursday and I wanted to go to McDonald's, it was like, oh, I can wait till Sunday. I can wait till Sunday, delaying gratification. Anyway, lost 100 pounds in about 10 months. And yeah, it just, it really, the other thing, I could only weigh myself once a month. So again, kind of a long system. So I'm making this a really long story. Sorry. So I shed all this weight and I was able to enjoy it. And I really, interestingly, I felt like the good times were ahead. Like I said, I don't know how heavy to get, but at my heaviest weight, I would look back at what I just loved undergraduate college. I thought it was wonderful. Had a great, great, great time. And I thought I felt terrible because that was over. And I thought the best days of my life were behind me. I mean, and I'm 23 at this point. You know what I mean? Because I weighed 340 pounds. I couldn't move. My clothes didn't fit. I felt bad. But then as that weight came off and my energy level increased, I got a lot of confidence back in that way. And it feels like the best days are yet to come. And it's really great. It's this is a different podcast, but.
No, that's okay. That's kind of what it's about. And honestly, I think you hit the nail on the head when you can make that transition in your head.
Yeah.
To teach yourself delayed gratification. There's something about that is life changing. And I know that you've also done quite a bit
to,
of
to put one cap on that story. Amber, when we met, I looked different today because I had skin that would hang. It would hang, right? So I did. I had plastic surgery to cut off all the skin. It was crazy. They cut off a bunch of skin and it's really cool. I can, but this is, like I say, this is not my original belly button. I was not born with this belly button. The doctor made this. This is the third belly button because there were two surgeries. But anyway, it was like that. It was a plastic surgery to cut all the skin. So, and Amber was a huge advocate in that kind of physical transformation to kind of match, because I kept the weight off, and I still looked, interesting. So you mentioned triathlons. Triathlons are something that I'm still interested in. With COVID, I only did one. Mm-hmm. There was one at the end of the season in Oscoda that I really wanted to go to, but it's a 3-hour drive and it was but I love swimming. Swimming was one of the things up in Gaylord. There was a community pool that I would swim at as I was losing the weight. And I'm a very natural swimmer. And a friend, Bill Hodges, his science teacher at Holt High School, got me into it. And but we do it every summer. Three, four per summer, we'll still do those sprint triathlons. And it's something to keep me working out. And I'm competitive. I try to fight it back with all my mental healthiness, but at the end of it, just still being competitive and something to work for. It's great.
Yeah. Yep. And I think that's you hit the nail on the head. I'm actually planning on doing the Hawk Island mini try is scheduled to happen.
Yeah.
I think it's in June or maybe the end of May. So I'm hoping to do that when I got my road bike worked up last year, last fall and been running a little bit. I haven't done much swimming lately, but
the final piece of the puzzle, hopefully. So 5Ks, triathlons, 10Ks, marathons. My wife is big into running, so I was at a marathon. There's something about the collective energy of race day. I know that a lot of people can identify with this. Yeah. And this is something that when I was in high school, I would have thought running 3 miles, you might as well say, why don't you run 5 million miles? You know, like, why would I ever do that? But there's this,
I agree.
There's a collective energy from it. And it's a very, most of the time, supportive thing, you know, whereas, you know, my first triathlon, right. Now, I don't know if they do body marking at the Hawk Island, but do you know what body marking is, Dave, for triathlons? Well, on the back of your calf, they write how old you are. Now, I don't know why they do it, but the thing is, like, I lost 100 pounds, got all the skin cut off, but I'm still north of 200 here. I'm still 6'3", right? And there'll be some dude, like, 3 years older than me, and I just destroy him in the water, right? And I beat him by, like, 5 minutes in the water, and he get on the bike, and you just hear it behind. You're 6 minutes ahead of him, and all of a sudden you hear this bike behind you, and it's like, it sounds like a Corvette, and you turn, and this like 80-pound 50-year-old, he's like, and he passes you, and he's like, good job, man.
Just flying by,
and I'm over here like, I hate you so much. This is working. It's like, oh man. So, hey, good job, man. No.
That's awesome. I love it. Yeah, right. Yeah, as he flies by you. Well, during the pandemic, I've been watching a lot of these movies on YouTube that are like about ultra marathoners, and I get super inspired by these guys. It's just amazing how you can run 100 miles, or there's one that's somebody ran 205 miles, the Lake Tahoe, 205 mile, whatever.
It's
unbelievable how these people do it. I don't get it. But it's inspiring. No, that'll never happen, but it's fun to watch. It's great to watch. I mean, it's a talk about delayed gratification.
Yeah.
Those guys, they get that. So, well, hey, man, we're coming up on over an hour here. I certainly really appreciate and want to respect your time. I just have one quick question for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Like all day about all this stuff, so I appreciate your time. But one quick question to kind of wrap things up here, and that is I ask this of all my guests, and that is it's a bit of an unfair question, but to kind of get to know you a little bit better, what if you could pick like a desert island piece of music or a recording or an album or one thing that you could if not listen to for the rest of your life, something that's just you feel really strongly about, you couldn't live without?
It changes day to day, right? This is going to be so corny. Right. The thing that comes to mind, it is a recording of the London Symphony Orchestra, okay, playing Pines of Rome. And Pines of Rome, the thing about Pines of Rome, my absolute favorite movement is the third one. There was a time, I think I lived in Gaylord, and I had that recording on in the car. I was commuting to work, and it was just a weird situation. So I was commuting like 45 minutes to work. And the sun was coming up, and that clarinet solo at the beginning of the third movement hit. And it was, oh, man, it can still do it. And I know people, good job, Mike. Right, you know, that ain't. Try someone who's been relevant, you know, since 2015, right? Yeah, but yeah, that Pines of Rome. And that was kind of, Pines of Rome was the first orchestral concert I went to at Michigan State. Leon Gagorian played that one, and I didn't really know a lot of orchestral music. Like I said, I thought band class meant, you know, Sunshine of Your Love. but man, yeah,
right.
That piece is a great one. And if I had to choose one, either that and for a full 180 or literally Led Zeppelin 1. I love that one. Oh, great.
There
stuff.
You go. So can't go wrong with either. Awesome. Well, hey, man, like I said, I really appreciate your time. This has been a really fun conversation. It's great to get to dive a little deeper on some of these topics with you kind of one-to-one.
Yeah.
And I appreciate your time and appreciate you as a friend. And I hope that you have a great, I hope you had a great holiday with your family and survive the rest of the semester, whatever it's going to look like for us. It's going to be interesting. Yeah. Yeah. We always do. So, tell your family I said hello.
Sorry, it took so long.
I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Righty.
Yeah. All right. Man, no, it's my pleasure. Bye. All right. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
This has been the Balanced Band Director. I appreciate you listening, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Again, today's show sponsor is Work of Art Custom Batons. Please visit them at www.woacb.com and connect with Mark on Facebook and Instagram at Work of Art Custom Batons. Please connect with me, Dave Larzelier, on Facebook and Instagram at Balanced Band Director or on email at balancedbanddirector@gmail.com. Until next time, be well.